Nightmares affect adults far more than most people realize. And for many, they're chronic, disruptive, and deeply distressing. Today, we're unpacking what causes nightmares and how modern sleep medicine actually treats them.
It's time to wake to sleep with the number one sleep authority, Sleep Science Today and Sleep Better Tonight.
Welcome to Sleep Science Today, the show where we talk about sleep and all of the science behind sleep. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. I happen to be a sleep clinician, so I not only talk about sleep, but I actually practice what I preach. Today, we are I'm excited to have Dr. Michael Nadorf. And he also is working in the area of sleep and has a new book out by the name of The Nightmare and Sleep Disorder Toolkit. So, Dr. Nadorf, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
We're always lucky to get people who, like yourself, are very busy in your regular lives and then pulling you away from your schedule to sit with us for an hour. We really appreciate you taking that time. So I definitely want to talk about nightmares, obviously, but I want to talk about things around nightmares as well. So as we get into the show, we'll get a chance to talk about dreams and other types of things that people may experience. But before we do that, can you share with us why you and why nightmares? What got you interested in nightmares?
It's been a really wild ride. So, yeah, but I think it also speaks to just how important nightmares are. So I never intended to do any of this. So I intended to go become a psychologist and study suicidal behavior. So a little background on me, my grandmother died by suicide. Oh. And ever since that happened, I've always really wanted to know, how does someone get to that point? You know, what is it that made someone so hopeless that they feel like that's the only way out? So I went to grad school primarily to study suicide. And it just so happened my very first clinical rotation was on a sleep service. There's behavioral sleep medicine. Uh-huh. And I'll never forget my first client. He's late 50s, engineer. And his sleep was so bad, he was forced into early retirement. And with treatment, we were able to get where he could go back to work. And I thought, A, this is life-changing. But also, B, I can see how someone could think about suicide if they had a lot of sleep problems. Uh-huh. So since there's already interest in suicide, I started looking at sleep in relation to suicide. And nightmares just kept coming out as this unique predictor of suicidal behavior, where when we did studies, we control for depression, we control for anxiety, PTSD. Taking those things out of the equation, having nightmares still predicted suicide, was still associated with suicide. And it just really piqued my interest where I just continued. And then as time went on, I did a dissertation that was a nightmare treatment dissertation. Mm-hmm. And now I'm probably more known for my nightmare research than my suicide research, which is ironic. But it was really coming in, seeing just how important this is to people, the impact it has, and then just going down the rabbit hole.
Wow. Wow. So I'd love to know a little bit more about that part related to the suicide issues related to nightmares. Are there numbers that you have? In other words, is it more likely that someone who committed suicide would have had nightmares, or what percentage of people? Do you have any of that data?
So I don't know exactly the percent, but there are some statistics that I think are really telling, especially looking at risk and how much it increases risk. Those we have pretty good data on. And there's a study that I love. It's not what I did, so yeah, I can't take credit for it. But Sjostrom and colleagues, 2009, they followed 165 individuals who had previously attempted suicide, looking at what factors predicted future suicide attempts in the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. And they found if you had nightmares, you were at fourfold, so 400% increased risk after accounting for depression, anxiety, PTSD, and substance use. So after we take out these main risk factors that we think of, having nightmares still put you at significantly greater risk of suicide. Wow. And so, yeah, it's one of those where when you look at that, and also, as we'll talk about, nightmare treatments actually can be very, very brief, but still very powerful. There are treatments out there for this. And so that's where it's a really exciting place to be, because we have this, you know, combination of a disorder that really does cause significant distress and problems, but we also have really good interventions for it.
Wow. Well, I definitely want to talk about the treatments, but before that, I do want to ask some more questions about the background. And I'm curious, you know, if you have people who have PTSD, depression, some of these other maladies that you were talking about, do we have any idea what causes nightmares? Like, is there a clear tie-in between one of those and nightmares, or do we, what do we know these days?
It's a great question. And one of the things that I think is an interesting piece of research that a lot of people don't realize. So people will think of nightmares as a symptom of PTSD, and surely they are. But actually, if you have nightmares before a trauma, you're more likely to develop PTSD than if you didn't. So they're actually a risk factor for developing PTSD. They're not just a symptom.
Interesting.
And so there's some underlying factor that's associated with both PTSD and nightmares. And there's at least some indication it might be emotion regulation. We know that those that have nightmares do struggle a bit more with regulating their emotions during the day as well. So maybe that both are a little bit weaker there. But we see that there is this association between the two. But also nightmares are associated with a lot of other disorders that people don't always think about. So it's associated with borderline personality disorder, which kind of made sense given the problems with emotion regulation. Potentially also associated with schizophrenia. Nightmares are actually a sign that you might be about to have a relapse of schizophrenia.
Wow.
So just across all these different aspects of psychopathology, we see associations with nightmares. Probably a lot of it, again, is that emotion regulation. But still, you know, with the suicide research I've done and others have done, what's interesting is that even when we account for this, it's not all of it. You know, there's still something unique about nightmares. And without going too far down the rabbit hole, I think a lot of it is, you know, having nightmares is such a unique experience. One thing that's really unique about nightmares is often those that suffer with it will actively try to avoid going to sleep. And for most of us, sleep is a respite. You know, I can't wait to go to sleep. But have it where sleep is so disturbing and you feel so hopeless avoiding this that you actively avoid trying to go to sleep. I mean, that tells you how really disturbing this is, because you're going to this place where you feel like you have no control, where scary things happen, or you have these, you know, flashbacks to things that have happened, and there's no one around to help you. It's a scary place for those that have really vivid nightmares.
Wow. Wow. So is there, like, if a person were having certain issues that led them to go see a mental health counselor, for example.
Yeah.
Is there some kind of a profile or something that you can think of that, because some mental health counselors listen to this show, and I know in training, we barely or really don't at all talk about nightmares or anything. Is there something that people should be aware of? Hey, I wonder, you know, we should probably ask this person whether they're suffering with nightmares.
So, my argument, and you know, this is a biased argument because I'm a nightmare guy, but I think we should ask everyone about their nightmares first and foremost. So I'll answer your question, and then I'll tell you why we should ask everyone. So we know it's anxiety. It's very common with anxiety. Obviously, it's common with PTSD. And with melancholic depression, we see that there's higher rates of nightmares. But what's interesting is a study I did about a decade ago. I took a sample of just those with clinically significant nightmares and asked them, have you told any healthcare provider about your nightmares at any point? And only about a third of them had ever told any healthcare provider. And what was really interesting is some of the qualitative data. So when we asked, why have you never told a healthcare provider, a couple things came out. One that was really interesting is people would say something like, I have nightmares every night, but doesn't everybody? Well, no, they don't. But unless you're talking to your friends, like, you don't know what normal is. Right. You know, you may not realize that this is abnormal. And then the other thing is, well, why would I tell my doctor about something they can't help with? Just not realizing that treatments are available. So what I would urge healthcare providers to do is, you know, just even if it's just one item, one question, just ask, do you have any nightmares, you know, that affect you during the day? Or do you have nightmares that once a week or more? Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of the threshold where we find that it's really disturbing. And just ask the question, because we know that the vast majority of those with clinically significant nightmares will never tell a healthcare provider.
Wow. Wow. So yeah, so that's a message that I think is really important to get out to the medical as well as the mental health community, is to simply ask the question, because you never know. Yeah. Even asking the question, do you have trouble sleeping? It's an important one that is generally not asked.
Absolutely.
So I think at this point, it'd probably be helpful to actually give a clinical definition of a nightmare. And the reason I say that is because so often I will have patients come in and they'll say to me, you know, if I ask, they'll say, oh yeah, I have nightmares. And I'm like, oh, and then we start talking about it, and then they start describing what's going on. And I'm like, that doesn't sound like a nightmare. That's something else, but it's not a night. So can you define for us what is a nightmare, and maybe how is it different from a dream?
Yeah. So great questions. So nightmares, the technical definition is it's a disturbing dream that leads to a startled awakening. So specifically, it's the, you know, where you have it, where you wake up and you're like, and your heart's racing, you're sweating, you know, that's a nightmare. Now, there's also something called disturbing dreams or bad dreams. Uh-huh. And that's where you had a bad dream, but you don't have that startled awakening. Now, are these really different? That's what nightmare nerds like me debate. We don't have great data showing if they're different or not. We do have some showing that either way we can treat them. But so that's a nightmare. Now, one of the things that commonly gets confused is nightmares and night terrors. They look very similar. So both of these, you're going to have a startled awakening, but they come from different stages of sleep. Nightmares come from REM sleep. Night terrors come from non-REM sleep. So when you wake up from a nightmare, it's usually during the second half of the night, and usually you have a vivid recollection of a dream, and you're usually pretty much instantly awake and alert because you're coming from a lighter stage of sleep. Okay. If it's a night terror, usually it's earlier in the night, and usually you don't have a recollection of a dream, or if you do, it's more thought-like. It's not vivid. Mm-hmm. And you're usually quite confused and disoriented because it's a deeper stage of sleep. And that differentiation is important because we can treat both, but the treatment differs. So just knowing, you know, so we put the right treatment with the right problem. Mm-hmm. But so that's kind of the broader scope. As far as overall what bad dreams and nightmares are compared to other dreams, you know, it's interesting. One of the things we all dream, and a lot of people will think that they don't dream. We all dream. But if we don't wake up during our dream, we won't actually ever encode it, and we won't remember having it. So if you're one of these people that thinks you never dream, if we woke you up at the right time, you would. It's that you don't wake up during that time of the night that you are dreaming. And what's interesting is that actually there was a study done many, many years ago that showed on average, actually the majority of dreams that people have are negative, but they may not realize it because they sleep through it. But the thing with nightmare sufferers is that they don't. You know, what happens is, this is my view at least. So I think it's an avoidance behavior. I think waking up is an avoidance behavior. So just like, say you're afraid of dogs. So what you do is you run away from the dog and you have what we call negative reinforcement where, you know, the anxiety goes down, we feel better. It makes it more likely that we're going to run away from the dog in the future. Well, what happens with your dream? You know, you can kind of run away the same way by waking up. So people have one of these negative dreams. They avoid it by waking up, but in doing so, they actually curse themselves to remember it because they woke up during the dream. So part of what we do in sleep medicine is try to help people sleep through the night better, both by doing practices that will help their sleep in general, things that we do for insomnia and other disorders, but also we have several techniques to actually try to change the content of the dream so it's not something you have to avoid or escape.
Wow. Okay. So definitely I want to talk about treatment options. Before that, I have a question, which is, you know, whether nightmares typically are always on the same theme or not. But before you answer that, we need to take a commercial break. So we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll find out the answer to whether nightmares are always on the same theme or not. And then we'll start talking about treatment. So stay tuned. We'll see you back on Sleep Science Today in just a minute.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Are you struggling to sleep and tired of guessing what actually works? Discover my new science-backed sleep courses designed to help you finally rest better. Visit sleepsciencetoday.com and start sleeping better tonight.
Sleep Science Today.
All right. Welcome back to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We're talking with Dr. Michael Nadorf. And before the break, we had the question of whether nightmares are always about the same theme or are they always different? And how does that compare to dreams?
Mm-hmm. And really, it depends on the person. So certainly with trauma or, you know, some people just have it where there's one dream that is kind of common. And that can be for a couple of reasons. So first, kind of going back to what I just mentioned, where, you know, it's a dream that you don't like having, so you avoid and you bring yourself out of sleep during it. You know, that may be the one dream that you have that you don't like. And so it's just every time you happen to have it, you pop out, but that's why you always remember having the same dream. Now, with that, some people, it's truly something different every single time. But one of my favorite examples was actually in my dissertation study, I had a participant that was a university professor who the dream was always different, but it always had the same theme, which was I was responsible for something, I forgot, and something bad happened. There's always something different, though. And I thought that was a very, you know, that is truly a professor nightmare as a professor now. I totally get it. But, and with that, it kind of shows you. Sometimes it's about an experience that we've had. Sometimes it's about the anxieties that we have. You know, everyone's a little different, but you can see those themes for a lot of people, either because of something they experienced or a common anxiety that they have that really hasn't changed.
Wow. Interesting. I'm just thinking about this. So whether it be dreams or whether it be nightmares, are the themes generally related to things that really happen in our lives, or can we have like nightmares or even dreams or anything that's like totally unrelated?
This is something that is, believe it or not, cutting edge. Like, we are just figuring this out now. We actually just submitted a couple weeks ago a poster for the upcoming sleep conference looking at this. So we had individuals that we're all nightmare sufferers, and almost all of them actually had a trauma history. And we looked at, are your dreams about the trauma, or are they about something else? And what was interesting is it was actually about a 50-50 split. So half the people had the dreams about the trauma, but about half of these people that had a trauma history had nightmares about something completely different. And my guess on that, I need to dig into the data more, but my guess is we know that for idiopathic nightmares, which are the nightmares where it's not linked to a trauma, we're not 100% sure where they're coming from. A lot of these are the dreams that come from childhood that we just never grow out of. And when you think back to the fact that actually having nightmares can predispose you for PTSD, it's possible that that part of the sample were those that had childhood nightmares were at greater risk of developing PTSD. And then had a trauma happen, and then, but still, it's those childhood nightmares that are still the ones that they're experiencing, not the ones from their trauma.
Wow, interesting. So with all of this work that you've been doing, you eventually come out with this book, The Nightmare and Sleep Disorder Toolkit. So that leads me into the question. I'm assuming your book talks about treatments and things, and you know, I'd love for you to tell us more about what exactly would be in the book, but also tell us about what type of treatments are available. What can people expect if they actually talk to somebody about the nightmares? What can they do about it?
Absolutely. So we wrote the book in part just because there are really good treatments out there, but even within behavioral sleep medicine, there aren't a ton of us that are trained on how to do these. So it always surprises me every time I give a talk at one of the conferences, how many people it's new information for. Mm-hmm. So, you know, trying to get the treatments out there. So with our book, there are really three main treatments that we went through. One is imagery rehearsal therapy. One is ERT, which is exposure, relaxation, and restricting therapy. And then the third is lucid dreaming therapy. And with these, they all do the same thing in that they're all looking at changing the dream, but just in different ways. And so with it, the way we wrote the book is actually have it be a choose-your-own-adventure book. So we talk about the logic behind these different treatments, what they look like, and you get to pick the one that you think is going to be most helpful. So, you know, I'll go into more detail, but just a very snippet of what these things are. For imagery rehearsal therapy, what we do is we create a new dream and we practice that while we're awake using visual imagery. So we use a technique to try to change the content of the dream, but we're not really trying to like expose you to the old dream or anything like that. It's purely trying to do a technique to change the content of the dream. Now, with that exposure, relaxation, and restricting therapy, that takes that same thing. So we're going to do that same thing, but it adds on exposure therapy for the old nightmare. Okay. And it also adds on relaxation. So it adds a couple different tools. And this is where actually it's fun. My co-author and I disagree a little bit. I'm one that I think you should do the first one. Do imagery rehearsal. Try that. See if you need more. And by all means, do the extra if you need it at the end. But since that's common to both treatments, I think start there and then see if you need more than that. But there are some people that think if you have any PTSD nightmare, you really need the exposure. So that's where we debate a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then lucid dreaming, something completely different, but still very fun. So lucid dreaming is where we actually help you learn how to become aware that you're dreaming in your dream so you can change the dream while you're having it. So all three strategies are getting at the same idea of we're changing the dream. So, and they do it slightly different ways. So to recap, imagery rehearsal therapy, we're changing the dream by having you practice a new dream, and that's the whole strategy.
Right. And you're awake.
ERT. Yes, while you're awake. ERT, you're doing that same thing with the new dream, but also we're exposing you to that old dream to try to make it so that's not as negative of a dream. So it's attacking it in two different ways at the same time. Mm-hmm. And then lucid dreaming is changing the dream while you're having it. So that's why we thought it's a really neat thing to be able to do is we have three empirically supported treatments. Let's lay them out there and let people choose the one that they're most excited about. And you can always go back and try one of the other ones, but it lets you, you know, pick the one you think is best for you and not necessarily just the one that your therapist is most comfortable with.
Right. Well, let me ask you a little bit about the lucid dreaming option, because I can imagine there's listeners out there who are saying, well, wait a minute, how am I going to, I'm asleep. How do I control what I'm doing when I'm sleeping? Isn't that like, you know, not possible? So tell us more about that part of it.
So all of us as a kid, you know, had the whole like pinch myself to see if I'm awake type thing. It's kind of that on steroids. So one of the things we do is we have you purposely throughout the day build in tests of are you awake or not? Because there are certain things that just seem across people to work differently in dreams. Mm-hmm. So some examples of these. Doors often don't work right in dreams. Like often if you try to open a door, it doesn't work. If you flip a light switch, usually the light will not change. A couple that are interesting, if you push down on a table or even with your hand, if you push against your hand, usually your hand will go straight through in a dream.
Huh.
And also, if you look at a clock, usually if you look at a clock, you look away and you look back at it, the clock will have changed in some meaningful way. Just these weird things. But what you do is you actually practice this throughout the day. You know, you go and you flip the light switch a couple of times, see if it changes or not. You push against your hand. But the more you do this, the more it's likely to end up in your dream. So then one of these times you test it, you push through and your hand goes right through your hand and you're like, oh, that's different. Wow. So that's one piece. They're kind of three pieces. That's one piece. Okay. Another thing you can do that's really helpful is if you journal what your dreams are about as much as you're able to remember them, you can figure out your own dream sign. So the themes that come up already in your dreams, and those can help prompt you when those things come up again. It's like, oh, I wonder if I'm dreaming. And then the third is if you have a mantra right before you go to bed, like if, you know, it's been right around the time you're going to bed, if you really kind of are very mindful and purposeful and think, I'm going to be able to control my dreams tonight. I'm going to be aware of my dreams and be able to control them. And you just say the mantra a couple of times. Actually, that combined with these other two things actually has pretty good effects. It takes practice. You know, it's one of those things, it's not an automatic thing. But, you know, the more you know your dream signs, the more you do this practice, the more these things come up in your dreams, the more you're able to identify them. And the first step is you identify that you're asleep. Usually people get there and then it takes a little bit more to be able to act on it. But once you're aware that you're asleep in your dream, it just takes a little bit of practice in that state to actually learn how to be able to take control of your dream from there.
Wow. So you got me thinking about something that, you know, that I'm personally experiencing.
Yeah.
And so here's the situation. For many nights over the last couple weeks, I have had acute insomnia, meaning that I'm up a lot during the night, but I know why. It's because I have a lot of things that are on my mind, a lot of things I'm working on, and the anxiety and all is keeping me awake. I get it. Yet, sometimes, like last night, I slept pretty soundly. And the reason that I say I slept soundly is, number one, I wasn't up, you know, looking for something to do. But I remember having a lot of different dreams, not nightmares, nothing bad, but dreams. And so my perception is that if I sleep soundly, that's when I will remember that I had a dream. So if I remember that I had a dream, I must have slept soundly. Is there any truth to that, or is that just my imagination?
I hate to say it, I think it's your imagination. I think it's, but I guess the good side is that if you're having dreams, you must be sleeping. So, you know, as opposed to insomnia. So that's good. But also, my guess actually is it's probably that you still have some of that anxiety going, and that's leading to a little bit more of the awakenings where you are waking up during those dreams as well. And that's actually why you're remembering having them. So, you know, my guess is it's a little bit better on the anxiety where it's not enough to keep you up, but you do have the awakenings. And because the anxiety both can lead to awakenings during dreams, and also it keeps us up a little bit when we wake up naturally. You know, one of the things I'm sure people have talked about on your show, but, you know, people don't always realize is we wake up several times during the night, just naturally at the end of each sleep cycle. And we all kind of do the same thing. Yeah, we, you know, roll over, make sure the house isn't on fire, and we go straight back to sleep. And, you know, if it's 5 minutes or less, we'll never remember that happening because it takes about that long for new memories to encode. But when you're anxious, you know, you stay up a little longer and then you remember having those. So that's the other thing that people come in and complain about it. They're like, I woke up several times last night. I'm like, well, everyone does. It's, you know, what it may be is that you stayed up a little longer with each of those awakenings because you had anxiety or you had something else going on, you were sick, you know. So usually that's where we remember those awakenings. But yeah, so in the case of this, what I think it shows is you did have better sleep than you were having. You know, you definitely got into REM sleep and were able to get some good rest, but still maybe awakening a little bit more. Another thing it could be too is there's something called REM rebound. That's I should have started with this. So we know that when you not get enough REM sleep, usually because of sleep deprivation, REM starts a little earlier in the night, and usually it's a little more robust. You know, like you're more likely to have dreams than vivid dreams when you're catching up on your REM sleep. So actually, I should start with that because that's probably the explanation is you're probably a little sleep deprived. And because of that, your body's really prioritizing that REM sleep when it does get to sleep.
Right, right. Well, thank you for answering that. So my follow-up question to that is going to be, and I don't know whether you have any experience in this area or not, but you'll tell us, is there anything to like dream interpretation and do dreams mean something? But again, before you answer that one, it's time for our second commercial break. So we will be back in just a minute on Sleep Science Today, and then we'll get your answer about dream interpretation.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Are you struggling to sleep and tired of guessing what actually works? Discover my new science-backed sleep courses designed to help you finally rest better. Visit sleepsciencetoday.com and start sleeping better tonight.
Sleep Science Today.
All right, we're back on Sleep Science Today with Dr. Michael Nadorf, and we were about to talk about, can you really interpret dreams? Do they mean anything? Is there something to that or not? What are your opinions?
Depends on who you asked, obviously. So for me, I was actually trained very behaviorally. It's really ironic that I got into the work I do because I was not trained on anything with interpretation or anything like that. So for me, usually what I do is the dreams tell me what someone's anxious about or, you know, kind of what's on their mind. Yeah, I find it helpful for that. But personally, I don't go beyond that as far as trying to interpret the dreams or read too much meaning into it. Mm-hmm. But I have colleagues, Dr. Leslie Ellis is one that immediately jumps to mind that does a lot of work in this area, where she is very involved in the content and the, you know, meaning. And so there are certainly psychologists I respect greatly that think that it does have a lot of meaning. But for me, I just haven't seen it in my work. But part of that is just I wasn't trained in how to interpret them. But I think it's an important question to ask. And actually, one of the things I'll talk about with clients before doing any of these treatments is I make them aware that what we're doing is actually changing their dreams and making sure they're okay with that. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, if you come in believing that your dreams mean something, whether it be cultural or past treatment you've experienced or whatnot, you may not want those dreams to change, or it's at least worth discussing. So we think through, well, what impact is this dream having? And, you know, it's possible that maybe dreams mean something, but maybe you've already gotten the message and this one's just sticking on longer than it needs to, and we're okay to let this one go. But you will have some people where they're like, no, I really believe that, you know, dreams mean something to me and I don't want to change it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that then changes our plans, because that's rare. I almost never see it, but it does happen sometimes. So I do always ask about, do the dreams have meaning and are you okay changing them?
Right, right. All right. Well, so let me ask the next question then. Yeah. So we've had a lot of guests recently talk about things as they relate to dementia risk. And we've talked about a lot of different things in sleep related to that. And so in this particular case, my question to you is there anything out there that you're aware of from the research that has any sort of tie-in or any expectation that if someone is at high risk or maybe even in the very early stages of dementia, that we would see a difference or a change in nightmares or dreams or anything along those lines?
Great question. So this research is very cutting edge and new and sparse. Not as much with dementia, but what we do see, and something that's related to this, is REM sleep behavior disorder. So I was part of a case study, and there have been a couple other studies in it too, actually showing, well, first of all, let me step back and tell you what it is. Yeah. So REM sleep behavior disorder, we can see usually later in life, and it's where you actually act out your dreams. So normally during REM sleep, your body will paralyze itself so you don't act out your dreams. In REM sleep behavior disorder, that doesn't happen. And it can actually potentially be a early sign of the development of Parkinson's. Not everyone goes on to Parkinson's, but many do. Uh-huh. And so what do we do about this? So obviously one of the things we do with this disorder is we try to make sure the environment's safe. But one of the questions that come up is, you know, okay, we have these interventions that can change dreams. Can we change the dream to be more, you know, tranquil, you know, try to make it so it's a less dangerous dream for this person to have? And again, cutting edge, like we're talking case studies here. But yes, it looks like we can actually use these same interventions to change the dreams that people have with this disorder in order to make it safer for them and for bed partners and, you know, everyone involved. So, you know, that's the thing that immediately comes to mind for me later in the lifespan, where these interventions really actually look like they'll play a role.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting to me to talk about sort of like being able to control things that happen in your sleep when generally you feel that I have no control because I'm asleep. And, you know, just philosophically, the discussions that we could get into could go on for, you know, for days. So let me ask this then. So you've got someone theoretically who's listening to the show and they say to themselves, you know, I think I have nightmares and I haven't talked to anybody about them. And I'm hearing about this book and, you know, sounds interesting. So who is the book right for? Is it for someone who wants to sort of try and treat themselves or just someone who wants to be more educated about nightmares? Who's the intended audience?
I think either of those. It certainly has every tool you need to be able to try to treat yourself. Another thing that I recommend, a lot of people are already in therapy for something, and maybe your therapist doesn't know how to treat nightmares. Bring into therapy, do it with your therapist. You know, it can help provide the therapist, you know, the pieces that they may not know and some guidance on how to do it, but also allow you to work with that person that you already trust and have been working with. But also if you just wanted background on, you know, what nightmares are, what they're associated with, how they happen, and also some, you know, general information about insomnia and other sleep disorders as well, it's great for that too. Okay. So it really gives you a lot of options there. Also it's great if you have nightmares, but also, you know, what we hear a lot is, I have a kid that has nightmares. You know, that's where we really get people interested is if your kid's waking up with nightmares and it's keeping you awake, you know, how they motivated parents.
Right.
But, you know, the same interventions can work for that too. You know, and one of the things that's cool, so maybe you have a younger child. With the imagery part, you know, maybe they're not old enough to do visual imagery. There's a little bit of research on it showing if you just have them color the new dream, that works too. So it's just any way to vividly engage with the new content that you want to have in your dream is really what we need to do. Also, the most important part, so say you want to do this where either it's visual imagery or you're coloring it, the biggest mistake people make is they don't change the dream enough. You want to change it so you're going to have a dream that you want to have, not a less bad nightmare, you know, not something that's, you know, neutral. I want you to have a dream you want to have and practice that. Because ultimately, you know, what we see is it's kind of two camps that come out on the other side of treatment. The majority of people will say, I don't remember anything. I just stopped having that nightmare. But you also have a group of people where they start remembering having that new dream. And actually, I think it makes perfect sense both ways because, as I mentioned, if you don't wake up during a dream, you won't remember having it. Mm-hmm. And if there's nothing to escape from that dream, if there's no reason to escape or to run away, you may just sleep right through it and never remember that you had it. That doesn't mean you didn't have it.
Right.
But the fact that you're not having the nightmare makes a big difference. And you're right. You know, this is one of the areas where it feels like we have so little control. Uh-huh. And that's where this treatment is so amazing because it works for the vast majority of people. So we have far more control than we realize. It's just that we're not used to that. We don't realize all the control that we really have in this situation.
Mm-hmm. So can you give a concrete example of sort of rescripting a dream? And I'll give you something to start
Absolutely.
With. You know, let's say that I have a nightmare and I've been having the same recurring nightmare for a little while now. And it's, I'm sound asleep. I'm at home. I'm alone. And I hear some noise. In my nightmare, I wake up, I pretend, you know, I feel like I'm waking up and I see this dark shadowy figure standing over me, like they're going to attack me. And then I, you know, wake up. How would I rescript something like that?
So web theory scripting, you know, one of the things we really stress is you want to change it. You change anything you want. It's a dream. You can have superpowers. You can change who's there. You know, change the content. Change anything you want. And that's where I think it's easy to not change enough. So in a situation like this, you know, you can change any aspect of it. You can have the lights on if you want in your dream. You can have it where, you know, you hear things, you want to go see what it is, and it's a surprise party. You know, you could be hearing things and realize that it's your favorite song being played in the other room. Whatever it is that you want to have is what you should do with it. So another example, if I may, is just one of my favorites. So I was working in the VA with a veteran, and his job was to go to the front lines, pick up the soldiers, and bring them back. And he had this dream that he was bringing back a whole busload of soldiers, and he's just starting to get dark, and he has this anxiety overcome him because he knows that's when really bad things happen. Mm-hmm. So I do the same thing, like change anything you want. I said, well, instead of the bus, I want to be driving my minivan. I want my kids in the back, and I want us to go to the park. And one of my greatest regrets is my dad died before my kids were born. Mm. I want my dad to be there, and I want to be able to meet my kids and see them play.
Oh, wow.
So I said, okay, let's do it. And I'll never forget the very next session, I go out to get him. He's crying in my waiting room, and I was still a trainee at the time. So I immediately think, what have I done? I've broken this veteran. I am in so much trouble. But I call him back, and I said, what happened? And he said, I started having that new dream, and it just meant so much to me to have that experience. I thought, how cool is that? That he got to have this experience he really wanted to have and got his nightmares treated at the same time. And so with that, that's where don't be afraid. You know, like the dream wasn't still military. He's driving his minivan. You know, change anything about it. You know, you can have superpowers in the situation. It can be whatever the noises are. You can change them to whatever you want them to be. Be creative, but make it a dream you want to have.
Wow, wonderful. That's a really nice story. It's nice to have a good outcome, you know, from something that's so terrifying. So I hate to say it, but we are actually out of time. Very interesting conversation. I really appreciate everything that you've been able to share with us and bring some light to and exposure to some of the things that were dark questions, you know, I guess playing off the dream scenario there. But I, again, for the audience, this is Dr. Michael Nadorf. The new book, The Nightmare and Sleep Disorder Toolkit. I know it's available on Amazon. Is it available elsewhere?
Pretty much everywhere. I've even seen it on Walmart, Target. You know, wherever you like to purchase your books, you can probably find it on there. If you can, email me and I'll help you find it. But, you know, and you'll see it's reasonably priced. The biggest thing is trying to get help to the people that need it, because there just aren't a lot of options out there for treatment. And I live in rural Mississippi, which, you know, there's not many providers around me. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to make sure that these tools were accessible to everyone. So please, you know, if you struggle with this or if you know someone that does, get your hands on the book or reach out to me and I'll help you get your hands on it, because these are tools that everyone should have.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for taking the time out of your day to join us. Thank you for putting all the information in a book and making it easily available to people. For those of you listening to the show, If you want to look into additional resources that we have available for you, it's sleepsciencetoday.com. You can always go there and you can find the YouTube feed. You can find the radio feed. You can find additional things we talk about, all sorts of resources designed to help you sleep better. So Dr. Nadarf, thank you for your time. And to those of you listening, we look forward to seeing you back on our next show of Sleep Science Today.
You have been listening to Sleep Science Today, your number one sleep authority.
Sleep Science Today.